Hardcore Podcast, episode 1 of season 2. I'm Nick.
I'm Connor.
I'm Alan.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Ryan.
Welcome, Ryan. So today's episode is going to be themed around esports, and we have not only the best esports player in the world, the esports captain of the UST esports team. Ryan, introduce yourself a little bit to our audience.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm the president of the new St. Thomas Esports Club, newly formed as of last spring.
Awesome. Well, there we go. So we're going to do a little unfortunate news. Due to time constraints and just a scheduling alignment over the summer, we are canceling episode 3 of Game with the Bros. It was a fun 2-episode spinoff. We really enjoyed it, but now it's back to full production.
And violin music plays in the background.
Yeah, I know.
Blame Nick.
Yeah, I know. Blame me. It was all my fault. But on the flip side, though, is our YouTube channel is growing substantially. We're getting 10 subscribers in less than a month. Look at that. We're making benchmarks. But we're doing YouTube. We're doing social media.
My video is the best.
Yeah, Con Man's is the best. He's a little cocky about that. But yeah, either way.
So. He's the best.
So before we go into our esports theme, we got to start off with the gaming news. So the big kahuna launch this week, Destiny 2. Has anybody had a chance to?
I've played the beta. I also have it pre-downloaded. Wait, what?
Play it, dude.
What? Oh, yeah, no, all right, so, like, I played, I never actually played Destiny 1, because it wasn't on PC, but Destiny 2, it's on PC.
Oh,
yeah, dude, he's
the PC lord. Remember the YouTube
video? I'm the master race,
master
man.
Steam sales!
All these graphic cards! So I finally got my hands on it, and, it's Halo and Call of Duty mixed together, and they took everything that was right from the two games and they kind of put it together. As long as the game doesn't keep crashing like it was in the beta, I think everything will be fine.
So, Ryan, I am curious. I was curious about his opinions on that kind of fusion of Halo and Call of Duty from the competitive aspect. We are having a more of a competitive light on this
fair.
One.
Okay.
So Ryan. I was just wondering what the best competitive gamer in the world is.
He is
on.
The best, and we're going to clarify that the entire episode. He is the best.
Oh, God. Not really. But Halo had a pretty big competitive scene. It was pretty interesting. It has a pretty long-lasting competitive scene, too. People even still play Halos 1 and 2 competitively, 3 as well. I was never huge into Halo, but both of my brothers were. And I actually played Destiny 1 quite a bit. I got kind of burned out on it, though. It was kind of grindy. But, like my fellow guest over here, I also played the Destiny 2 beta, and I thought it was pretty fun. It ran pretty well on PC. I played the Destiny 1 on PS4, of course, and I thought that it was a lot more enjoyable on PC. And I think it has potential to make a good competitive game. Like I said, it ran really smooth. I actually didn't have any problems with crashes.
Really?
That means Connor's PC is the problem here, not the game.
Well, don't they have to cater a little bit to the best competitive gamer in the world?
They do.
He is the.
But
give him all the frame rates.
Like I said, I thought it ran well, and I thought it was very enjoyable. I want to pick it up. It comes out later in October on PC. I'll definitely pick it up.
Yeah, because it's launched already for console.
Yeah.
So one question though, in the social space, did y'all get a chance to play that or test that at all? The social space on the farm during the beta.
When you say social space, you mean the
hub area kind of where you run around? Because there's a dying question I got. So you guys need to play on the hub world at all on the farm.
I did not.
Okay. No. And we'll save that for later when it launches for October. We'll talk about that again. Basically, there's a secret soccer metagame that Destiny is included in there. And there's going to be some inside esports of a video game. It's going to be esports game within a gameception type stuff.
Oh, interesting.
Some Lucio ball?
Basically, just about.
And we are off to the races with the Overwatch references.
It's not a casually hardcore episode without Overwatch.
Without a casually hardcore game.
Game of the year right here. So the next topic of news is, did anybody play L.A. Noir back on the 360 PS3 on?
You know, I tried it. I'm not super huge into those mystery ones. I'm more of the guy who has, you know, stealth is optional and mysteries are optional, kind of beat up who I think is guilty. That's my play
style.
So you're
Batman.
Yeah. my game style is a mixture of Batman and Kratos.
Okay.
When given the option. So
well, what part of Kratos?
What?
What aspect of Kratos?
Yes.
That part.
But it was really interesting to see, and it was really cool to see a game take a different turn because L.A. Noire came out kind of in the height of like Call of Duty and Battlefield 4 was a little later than that.
It dropped like 2012. It was
it was the height of kind of like the first person shooters and the big shoot 'em ups, and so to have kind of that mystery solving, tactical, kind of tactical, pseudo tactical.
Well,
it was interesting, just not my style.
I got you. Well, the reason why I'm bringing that up is that Rockstar just announced four versions of the game.
The Switch.
One for the Switch, one for the PS4 and Xbox, and then a VR one as well for Vive.
Okay, I'm
so they've recreated seven missions totally in VR. So, I mean, the rumors were true. I remember hearing about rumors at the start of the summer. I never really thought it'd come to fruition, but it's Rockstar's finally released a game on a Nintendo console. That's another big thing, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know if I'll be picking it up on Switch. I could see myself grabbing it maybe later down the road, just because, like what Eric said, there's so many big titles coming out, and as we get older, it's hard for us to kind of play every game. What's funny, you have more money to buy everything, but you can't play any of it. You have less time to play any of it.
Yeah.
Something I do think is cool about this, sorry for cutting you
off. No, go ahead.
I'm not sure how this is going to go, because this is the first kind of, I don't want to say the first, but it's the big platform jump onto the Switch out of the games we were promised.
Right.
So, L.A. Noire, and the big one that we are probably going to hear a lot more about is the Skyrim Switch version, but it's
Skyrim.
But it's like
the remastered.
Next, that's another casually hardcore game. Skyrim.
It's those next steps.
Right.
So you have this game with seven missions on. Was it just VR that has seven missions?
VR or? Just has seven missions, but they're built from the ground up for the VR platform.
So, but then for the Switch, it's the entire game, right?
I think so. Yeah.
So if it's the entire game, then that's that next step. So it's not quite the real high intensity action shooter that we are, you know, anticipating is the wrong word. The high action shooters of, like, the Halos and stuff, but it has that aspect. Wow, I just rambled for a good, like, minute. I'm not even sure if what I said. TLDR.
I blacked out there for a little while.
TLDR. L.A. Noire is going to add that shooting in high action aspect with kind of some of the slower pacing that we've expected from Nintendo. At least that's kind of how I feel when it comes to shooters and Nintendo.
No, that's fair.
Well, here's the thing, right? Nintendo, compared to Sony, right? Compared to Xbox, it's not really viewed as a real competitor usually when you list, like, Xbox, Sony games, right? But now that the Switch is out, it's being seen as, like, these are the top three instead of the top two. So I feel like the Switch has added more credibility to Nintendo as a company overall.
No, I agree. I feel like
for
Nintendo, its struggles have been third party. And for, I know it's a port, but at the same time, it's not exclusive port to Nintendo. So like when the Wii U came out, it had, you know, Batman games ported to it. It was just developers throwing out titles because they could. This is actually also coming to Xbox and PlayStation. So there actually is effort going to this title. But for the last piece of news, as we kind of push through this, PUBG just announced 1 million concurrent users at one time. That's passed every Steam game ever. That's more than Counter-Strike Go. It's more than Dota 2, and is now the most played game on Steam.
Did it pass League?
It passed. No, League's not.
We're
talking about just Steam as the platform itself.
Okay, yeah. I was just wondering.
No, all over the world. If PUBG was an early access game, to beat League of Legends, and it's a free game. I don't know. I would be playing PUBG right now. I wouldn't be here. Like, honestly,
ridiculous. It's my favorite game right now.
I actually haven't played it very much, but I've had a lot of people that I know play it and recommend it. I can imagine it'd be something that'd be really fun to play with other people.
So, basically, I want to actually touch on that real quick. So, they're doing some cross-platforming between Xbox and PC, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I read that, and they're adding in some, I think they're taking the... I can't remember which game they're taking the
aim assist from the Destiny games.
Yes, Destiny.
And then they're taking the water tech from upcoming Sea of Thieves game and using that as their water assets.
Yeah.
So Microsoft is really investing into this game and pushing it really forward.
And they're about to release a new map, actually, for PUBG. Right now, they have three. I mean, it's the same map, but they have nighttime, they have raining, and they have just daytime.
There's a desert map.
Yes, they're releasing a desert map.
Mm-hmm, yeah, kind of touching on the popularity of the game, it is pretty impressive given the fact that it is a early access game.
It's a beta.
Yeah, essentially. And it's amazing because for the longest time, it was always League of Legends and Counter-Strike at the top of the Twitch viewers. Mm-hmm. Always. Usually League of Legends and Counter-Strike was always very close behind. And now PUBG is at the top. It's always has the most viewers. It's kind of like the popular PC game right now. It's kind of amazing, honestly.
I mean, even their like Reddit, like I'll see a PUBG Reddit thread on like front page every once in a while, like a lot of the time.
Also touching on the competitive scene, right? They
yeah.
had this mm-hmm. This tournament.
Yeah, they had the Invitational. It was, what was it, 300 grand?
I think so. There was a lot of people. C9 even competed in it, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Well, it's just crazy to think, though, too. Like, it is part of gaming culture now. Like, to a degree, like, everyone plays it. Just like how the big next game, everybody played it. Like, that's what PUBG is. And it's not even, like, fully released. You got to think about that.
Something
like,
I thought was really interesting is that it didn't really follow the classic, I don't know, the way I think of it is a classic competitive format of, like, you have a team versus a team, and that's what it was with PUBG. I know there are teams with PUBG, but it seems so much more individualized than, say, a Counter-Strike or, say, a League of Legends or, say, an Overwatch or something like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think the reason that PUBG is so entertaining to watch is because of something called asymmetrical balance, which is completely dependent on the loadouts that each person gets, because some people are going to be more lucky than other people.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to touch on that, too. It's interesting to think of the game, like, how far it'll go from a competitive standpoint, because there is a level of RNG in the game, kind of where you fall, where you spawn, what items you're near in the beginning. It's interesting to see kind of how they approach it, because to make a game kind of perfectly competitive, you have to remove a lot of those randomly generated aspects. I think it'll be interesting to see where it goes.
So speaking about competitive games, we do have the best gamer in the world in our studio right now.
Can we get a theme music to play whenever we say that?
Get the Rocky music going in here.
That's John Cena, but, you know.
So we're going to bombard Ryan with questions with here in a bit, but why don't you get the opportunity to kind of talk about what your background is, why,
what
do you eat? What do you eat for breakfast?
Kind of,
do
you actually put your pants on one leg at a time, or do they just?
Do you use G Fuel?
What's your favorite gamer fuel?
Yeah.
What kind of got you into competitive gaming? What was your kind of like humble beginnings?
So I've always been a pretty competitive person. I played sports the beginning parts of my life, all the way up into high school. I played soccer and I ran track. I'd always been kind of competitive, but I didn't like sports as much as I liked video games, to be quite honest with you. Maybe that's just because I wasn't as good at sports as video games, but
I know the feel.
That's neither here nor there. I've been really competitive. I really enjoy being competitive. I like winning. Of course, I think everyone likes winning, but, you know, I started off playing a lot of shooters like the early Call of Duties, Call of Duty 2, 3, and 4. I really enjoyed those games, but I liked it from a competitive standpoint. I was always trying to do my best, you know, seeing what the best players were using, kind of their loadouts. I was very interested into seeing what the best players were doing. And so at one point, my brother showed me League of Legends, and I was very new. I never played a MOBA before. At the time, both it and Dota 2 were very new. No one had really been playing. They both had pretty small followings. And League of Legends was actually a game that was formed from some developers of Dota 1. And they kind of broke off and made their own thing. And they showed it to me, and I got hooked almost right away. It was honestly amazing. And I've just been playing it ever since. I've used that to try and start a club here at St. Thomas, kind of based around that game.
Yeah, so tell me more about the process. How did you kind of get the ball running on that to where it is today?
I just kind of randomly brought it up to a few of my friends that I knew who played the game as well. And I thought, you know, don't you think it'd be fun if we made a club and we just got together and played League of Legends, but we got to say we were kind of part of a club, like we did it through the school. And they all thought it was a good idea, and I kind of thought, why not? I know one of my older brother's friends actually started the League of Legends organization over at Gustavus a few years back, and that was kind of some inspiration for me because I knew him pretty well, and he kind of gave me his rundown of how he did it, and so I kind of tried to copy what he did in terms of trying to convince the school that it'd be, you know, a good use of time and whatever, and they approved of it. All the students on the school board thought that it was a great idea. Even a few of them played the game themselves, and they were all on top of it, honestly, so I was very happy with how that turned out.
So was there any kind of like struggles kind of with that at all? Kind of, was there any like kind of bumps in the road getting that started?
There was a few. Talking to a few of the faculty in the school that are a bit older than us, they were pretty hard to convince. They thought it was kind of a waste of time. They didn't see any point. They really didn't see any longevity in the club. At first, we kind of had the club centered around, we wanted it to be a League of Legends club. But in order to kind of convince them, we kind of broadened that into an esports club. So technically, we're just a competitive gaming club, but we only have members who play League of Legends at the time.
Very convenient.
Yeah. My hope that if the club continues, I really hope that it does, even after I graduate, I'm hoping that they branch out into other games. You know, maybe if PUBG is a competitive game, Counter-Strike, maybe Dota 2. I would really like for it to broaden a little bit. That's kind of how bigger universities are doing it. Like the U of M, for example, or even you and I were looking at University of Miami, Ohio. Yeah. Kind of has their organization propping up. It's really interesting. I think that it's a really interesting kind of organizational standpoint that I think a lot of schools will be taking advantage of very soon.
No, I agree. It's cool to see, at least from what an outside perspective is kind of like being a part of this. Esports last year as an industry made $1.2 billion. Just kind of let your mind sink on that a little bit. NBA teams are investing in own rosters. The most recent team, from a guy from the Suns, left to work for an esports team, went to work for Envy. I think that's correct. Don't remember.
I think you're correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And it's just crazy to see how gaming has become such a cultural phenomenon in that aspect.
Actually, I think I recently, there was news about a 17-year-old kid being signed for an Overwatch team. And it was like, I think $17, $18 million contract.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you see those Overwatch leagues, the one that was just recently created, the contract was that for every team, a base pay is $60,000 for each player on each team.
Mm-hmm.
That's to play Overwatch. Now, imagine if you're a player playing different games on top of that for the same team. And then you get commissions also for the winnings for each tournament as well. So, I mean, you basically get to play video games. It's so cool. Go ahead, sorry.
I don't mean to cut you off. No, of course. But to kind of touch on that, it's really interesting because I've been following the League of Legends competitive scene ever since season 3. It's currently in season 7. One season goes by per year. And at first, the players were getting paid almost nothing. Like, it was almost seen as, like, stupid and foolish to join a competitive team unless you were on very, very specific teams, because the biggest kind of organization in League of Legends right now is Team Solomid, and it's a multi-million dollar organization now, but it started off as just, like, a few guys.
Yeah. Back in the day, if you didn't have an umbrella organization that covered all, like, platforms of every type of game, then you're kind of screwed.
Yeah, it was people, they were seeing it as kind of such a foolish decision. They weren't making, like, anything, and now it's unheard of to see competitive League of Legends players get paid anything less than, like, $70,000.
Yeah, and kind of branching off of that, we discussed something similar to what I'm about to bring up now in Season 1, but we know kind of our opinions of this, but what are your opinions of someone who plays the video games and an esports player, a competitive gamer, being called an athlete, you know, and being kind of compared to an NBA player, an NFL player. And we kind of came to the conclusion that while it's different, it's still kind of similar in the aspect of, like, it is, people aren't necessarily going to watch these, you know, these matches. They're watching for the competitive aspect, but also for the specific, you know, players, much like you would do for a sports team. But at the same time, there's a different set of skills required, and I think people are having a hard time wrapping their heads around the fact that although the skills are different, it's still a similar reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering what your thoughts were. I'm personally in the camp of not 100% sure if athlete is the right word, but I can certainly be swayed.
Yeah, I feel very similar to the way you just explained it. Nick and I actually had a discussion about this last year.
Yep.
We kind of discussed it over lunch. Like, how can these people really, how can you really even classify these people? There's a reason why they're called esports and not sports. I really don't think that they can be bunched in with athletes, you know, like Adrian Peterson, and Tom Brady. I think that the kind of physical, mental strain that they go through is very different than the kinds that these pro gamers are going through. Obviously, I'm not a pro gamer. I can't speak on that.
He's being humble.
But I'm sure everyone can kind of understand that. They're definitely athletes in a way. They're esports athletes, though, and I think that that's the clear distinction that needs to be made. It wouldn't be called an esport if it wasn't different from a real sport, you know? And that's just kind of my take on it.
Yeah, and something that I was talking to some of my friends about, and even my sister and some of her friends who are also, they're absolutely casuals. And it pains me to say that I'm related to such a filthy casual.
Wow.
But
there's nothing wrong with being official, filthy casual, man.
But
you're normal.
But what they were thinking was, is that the term competitive gamer seems to make so much more sense to them than athlete. And I would see that. I think competitive gaming is absolutely a good term because it adds that sense of, you know, there's a challenge that this is another level. It's not just, they're not just a gamer. They're a competitive gamer. They're a professional gamer.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I really liked your example of saying, you know, you're watching this team not just because you enjoy the team, you think they're good, but you watch them for like specific players, because that was kind of how I got into the scene. There were a few pros that I would watch stream on Twitch that I really, really enjoyed, and then I kind of followed them and I followed their team, and that was kind of what got me into it. And that's really similar to, you know, some of these people that are really hooked on like a professional football team, for example, because they're of their quarterback, like I mentioned Tom Brady in the past. You know, people from New England worship Tom Brady, and it's very, very similar. A lot of people really, really get hooked on these professional teams because they feel like they have a connection to a player, they really enjoy watching them, and then they want to see the team and the organization succeed. It's very similar to that.
Yeah, I mean, I know for myself, the big thing that kind of made that click for me is when I started getting into Overwatch a lot more. Yes, I'm bringing it back to Overwatch. Sue me.
No, yeah. We're going to get sponsored by Overwatch at this point. Hopefully. That would be fantastic.
Blizzard sponsorship.
You guys have 800 subs. Great. Here you go, sponsorship.
I started getting a little bit more and more into the competitive scene, and I really like Reinhardt. But I realized that where I was good in kind of the average quick play, I was falling short of that competitive play. And so the first thing I thought of doing was looking up, you know, guides. What are some of the tactics? And there were a few pro Overwatch players that kept popping up for Reinhardt. And so then I kept just watching them, and then I would single them out. And then each one played pretty differently. And so then I would single out, all right, who matches my play style the best? And then I started following them, you know, and to get myself better, I started watching them more, and that's kind of when it clicked to me of, like, I did the same thing for a while before six concussions with football, is I would watch professional offensive linemen and how they would play, and I'd learn their mentalities and how they would do things, and it was very similar for me.
With kind of final note, sorry, the athletic and athlete thing, me personally, when it first got changed from competitive gaming and MLG to esports, and that whole name transition kind of occurred a couple of years back, two or three years now, I was very against it just because I felt personally insulted that somebody that was doing what I considered a hobby on the same level of amount of athletic work that I did. And that was just me being kind of naive to what it was. That was me not understanding and researching what it was. That was just me getting aggressive. And as kind of watching esports develop, these players go through strenuous tasks. Now, don't get me wrong, a football practice is different from an Overwatch practice, League of Legends practice, but the amount of time and effort that goes into it is still there. The amount of passion is still there. It's just more technical versus physical, but the mental is still there. You still have to be mentally capacity there. And I feel like the name will eventually people get used to, but it's like motorsports. You know, or water sports. You know, everything has its own classification. It's going to take time for that to develop because esports as a whole entity is relatively new in how it's growing. And that's kind of like what I have kind of taken onto that. So we'll see how this goes. I'm definitely not as against it as I was originally. And as the more I'm working with Ryan on our esports team, it's just you get to kind of get a more understanding for it because it allows people that aren't freaks of nature, they get to play these sports professionally, allow us to compete because we're competitive. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not 6 foot. Six like Eric or five, and I know I outrun a 4.44 40. So what am I gonna do? Well, I'm gonna be good at video games. That's a way for me to kind of get that outlet. So it's good to see it grow and continue.
And all right, so 6'4", just to clarify that.
So I mean, bringing it back, like this whole esports, I feel personally for me, it's a lot more like interpersonal, like a lot more 1v1 almost, like with like me watching and them playing. Like these people are on Twitch every day, like streaming, and you can type in Twitch chat, like, hey, how you doing? They'll respond, oh, I'm pretty good, just playing. Playing some games here, or you can like give them a few dollars. You don't see like Teddy Bridgewater like sitting on a camera basically throwing a football, and they'll like run back and talk to someone throwing a football. I know that sounds completely
well. Teddy Bridgewater is definitely sitting right now. Ooh, too soon for that.
Okay,
one.
Okay.
No, that's a really good example. Yeah, though. You feel like almost like a connection.
A part of that almost. Yeah, like everyone is a part of this esports where. Only the people employed by the Vikings and the players are a part of the Vikings almost.
Well, but something else I think is a little different about it is the community. So for so long, sports, I mean, we can go back to ancient Rome with the original Olympics. Like, sports have been around, and they are anywhere, anywhere you go, sports will be, you know, very
dominant.
Yeah, it'll be a dominant presence wherever you go. In Europe, you'll have soccer. In America, you have football. Most places, it's soccer. But
football,
hockey,
you have hockey, you have cricket,
lacrosse,
you have
MMA,
running, esports,
you know, rugby, boxing. I mean, think about all these different sports and how prevalent it is. And then you go to that aspect of the gamers. These are people who do this for a hobby. But then here's these people on these massive stages, and you're going to want to support that. You're going to want to say, you know, I haven't done this sports the same way that these guys have done, or I've been, you know, I've been on the outside looking in for the sports, but here's something I'm in. Here's something I'm in with. And so you're going to rise up. And there is a stereotype of, you know, athletes kind of putting down the nerds. And
I'll attest to that. I was a d-
And some stereotypes do exist for a reason. And so here's these people who it's like they've been kind of put down or shut in by society, but now they have this.
How the tables have turned.
Exactly. The tables have now turned. And there's this outlet for everyone. And what's the first thing you're going to do? You're going to latch onto that to be a part of something.
Agreed. And it's cool, too, because gaming has become so mainstream to that point, is that people that, especially with this podcast, two people we've talked to, people have started to kind of come out of their shell a little bit because the typical stereotype of a gamer is evolving. It's everyone now. And so people can kind of like comfortably come out and say, hey, look, I like to play games. I'm going to play them competitively. I'll make a living out of it. And it's not as taboo.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In a sense that you're not, it's now obviously where you go, it's going to be depending on the age generation you're dealing with.
Depends who you're talking to.
Depends who you're talking
now
to.
It's 12-year-olds bullying you if you don't play games.
Exactly. See,
or
that's where we got to.
Bullying you if you don't play a game well enough.
Yeah. But it's good to see, though, like, the people that I've talked to and interacted with that I never thought was a gamer are actually huge gamers and huge nerds. Like, part of why I was so mean to people that played games in high school, et cetera, was because I loved it, but I was, like, the people I hung out with made fun of me for it. So, like, I had to kind of, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't have to, but that's what I
peer
did.
Peer pressure, man.
Peer pressure.
Well, the thing is, right, traditional media, I think, still hasn't had time to adapt to esports or competitive gaming. The most recent and, like, the most eye-opening thing I've seen to this change is, like, a couple weeks ago, I think, there was a Super Smash Bros. Competitive player on Good Morning America.
No way.
Yes.
Really?
I think it was Good Morning America, at least.
You think and or they, you know? What was it going to be?
Well, let's
Good
ask
Night
Google.
America.
Let's ask Google.
You can Google it. But
Good Middle Day America. That's it, right?
It was actually...
Good Afternoon. Good Allen Day America.
It was actually really unbiased. Like, yeah. It wasn't like, oh, this is nerdy. This is stupid. It was like, what do you do? How much do you get paid? What do you... How competitive is it? How strenuous is it? How much?
I mean, half of that is like being PC and all that, but let's not get too
okay,
far.
let's actually give Alan credit here and not roast him every episode of the season so far, or going to be. If people haven't figured it out yet, Alan is now the roast central ever since
Don't
his gaming tournament.
Yeah, what I wanted to kind of like mention though, when you said that it's almost like the stereotype is changing of a gamer, it's when I first started following the competitive League of Legends scene like five, whatever years ago, pretty much all like the best players were kind of overweight, not very good looking guys, you know, and that's just kind of how it was.
Alan.
But now it's amazing. All these guys are very fit. They spend a lot of their time, you know, eating right, getting like working out and stuff. An organization, a pretty big organization in the U.S. at least, Team Liquid actually recently just built like a new multi-million dollar facility. The players can go there to get like all their meals cooked. They can work out there. They can play basketball. They can do all these things, and they can go practice their scrimmages, like, all in one building. It's honestly incredible to see kind of the way it's started to adapt.
Well, it's awesome because the player's health is becoming critical because these guys do such long play sessions that you're going to have to take care of your body. And as, like you said, the stereotype changes, people are, like, trying to break from that typical basement stereotype because I can be fit, strong, and in shape, good-looking, don't look like Alan.
Yeah, let's not roast Alan this week.
We've already had a few roasts.
Yeah, okay, I felt that. Alan, I love you, buddy.
At least for an episode or two.
Alan's very good looking, ladies. He's single.
Please don't.
It's interesting though, because a lot of the time and money that's gone into making sure these players are fit now, there's been a lot of testing and scientific proof that you know the more fit they are and the better they're eating, they're actually performing.
Yeah, the reaction
game,
times,
too.
I mean,
yeah,
like,
it's,
brain.
Yeah, it's very
synergy.
Interesting. It's
that
very
makes sense.
Interesting.
Eric, you've been raising your hand and whispering. What's going on, brother?
Well, I was just thinking when we were talking about the shift of the stereotype. I remember when The Force Awakens came out. Do you remember the video you showed me? There was a new show.
You're talking about the kid spinning the lightsaber around? To be quite honest,
I can't remember last week, so...
There was this news channel, and there was some...
Alex Jones.
Some younger woman on there who all she was doing was bashing these people who were sending tweets about how they were so excited to watch The Force Awakens, how they were getting ready to buy tickets, how they were waiting in line to see the premiere on the first day, how these people were, you know, skipping school, and she was, and this woman was constantly just berating the Star Wars fandom for not being cool, for not having lives, for
being a nerd is cool nowadays.
Exactly.
And if you're not a nerd, if you're not a nerd nowadays, you're not cool. And that's awesome.
Well, but do you remember what happened? You probably don't, because you don't even remember what
I jumped about. Ship from not being cool as a nerd to being a nerd. See, I'm following the trends.
And what happened was the news anchors actually got defensive, because they're like, well, I'm a fan of Star Wars, and they're a fan of Star Wars, and we're excited to go see this. And this person who was supposedly, air quotes, popular, and more air quotes, cool, was being absolutely shot down for all of her opinions because times have changed so much.
Which is good.
Like, I remember, like, my dad and me, like, sitting on the couch watching every single Star Wars that was out when I was, like, 6 years old. Like, that was, it was cool to me. Lasers and in space? Who wouldn't want to see that?
It's cool to see how what we love is also universally loved and not fake, if that makes sense. Like, it's genuine across people you talk to. Like, regardless of what part of it is, you love it.
By the way, the interview was Good Morning LA?
Good Day LA.
Okay, Good Day LA.
So it wasn't America quite yet. Yeah. It was Good Day LA. I knew it was something Good Day. So, Alan, you haven't talked about – Alan is really big into competitive fighters. You got to have some questions, man.
I do got a lot of questions. First of all, so right now you're only looking at MOBAs. I'm assuming because of the popularity of esports, it's going to be MOBA shooters. It's going to go in that order. MOBAs, shooters, and then fighting games, if they ever make it into the club. I'm just trying to see what your opinion is.
You're trying to see if like fighters would be a part of it? Yes. Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's what I'm interested in.
Honestly, I would love that. I was a big fan of Smash growing up. I played on the N64 with my brothers. I played on the N64. That game was so good. And I've never really been big into like Street Fighter, Tekken, honestly, games like that. I can see why people think they're so interesting. But I played a lot of Call of Duty, Battlefield, Counter-Strike. And the MOBAs as well. Personally, I would love to add in the future, maybe past my legacy, I would love for them to add Counter-Strike in and a fighting game. I've met a few people that play Smash competitively.
I'd like to Alan does play Smash competitively, though. And he's very good. Very good.
I'm better than you.
I beat you.
When?
The last Smash tournament.
I don't remember.
I remember this loud and clear.
Saying this.
Who's your favorite?
No, I'm kidding.
Who's your main?
Which one?
Melee.
Melee. We'll say Melee.
Okay. Well, I really like low tiers. I'm not gonna lie. I like low tiers. I like Mario.
I like Kirby. I'm right there with you.
Kirby's not a low tier.
Kirby is the worst in the whole cast in Melee.
I don't know.
You can mash out of his grab.
But people have won as Kirby though.
Yes, of course they've won as Kirby because those people are skilled. People can win as Pichu, one of the top players in
so
Melee.
So you're saying me as Marth doing nothing but edgeguarding is not skill.
No, that is skill.
No,
edgeguarding is technical.
No, that's not about your stupid edgeguarding. Absolutely not. Okay, so I was very good at, I'm going to lower it down. I was pretty good at Melee, and I taught them how to play Melee.
Halo? You taught him how to play Halo?
Yeah, so anyways.
Let's preface it. Nick basically taught me everything I know about competitive Melee.
And now he is beating the master.
Do you know how to
edge guarding?
Not a fucking.
Only the student
can
beat the master.
So, either way.
Do you know what multi-shining is?
Nope.
All right, well,
don't teach him more things. He doesn't need to know more stuff.
Okay, maybe it's not competitive Melee, but it's more Melee than what I knew.
Okay,
I started teaching him Project M, too.
That's probably better.
Yeah.
So, we'll keep real.
But yeah, kind of like you asked, I mean, I would like them to add competitive fighters eventually. That's just kind of not in my ballpark. But like I've said, I've met quite a few people at St. Thomas that are pretty passionate.
You see, I'm the opposite of you. I personally, I don't find MOBAs interesting. And that gets me a lot of hate from a lot of people.
I don't go for it, man. This is all about
questions. How do you not like, exactly.
Shame.
How do you not like like MOBAs, like League of Legends, Dota, Smite.
I actually got a kind of agree with that. I tried League of Legends, and I wasn't a huge fan. I mean, I liked it. I played it, but I could never see myself getting, like, competitive with it. I really enjoyed Smite. I was much more – I really liked that third-person view as opposed to the omniscient view.
Mm-hmm.
And it just I don't know. I just liked it better.
Well, Ryan taught me the tutorial for League of Legends. That's basically my experience. And then the Heroes of the Storm skin for Genji. So I have no experience in MOBAs whatsoever.
With time running a little slow, could I ask one question?
Oh, yeah.
As the greatest competitive video game player in the world, what, in your opinion, makes a game competitive as opposed to not? Because you have competitive fighters and non-competitive fighters. You have competitive shooters and non-competitive shooters. I mean, something like Call of Duty, not competitive. I don't see it being competitive. But you have...
It's very competitive.
Then you have... Well, for 12-year-olds, not professionals.
It's still very professional, like competitive for 12-year-olds. Probably even more so.
Yes.
Xbox Live 12-year-olds are the worst.
But then you look at, like, Halo, and that one got pretty competitive.
Yeah, that's true.
Or you get Counter-Strike, and that one got competitive. And PUBG is getting competitive. And you also have the MOBAs, which seem to just automatically go into the competitive category.
Yeah.
What, in your opinion, and we talked about the
asymmetrical balance.
Yeah, so kind of, like, what makes a competitive game competitive? Like, what community, like, how does that happen?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm not entirely sure how to answer it, but I came from a background of playing both Call of Duty and Counter-Strike, so I can kind of see both sides, because there is competitive Call of Duty, there's competitive Call of Duty tournaments. I don't really see the appeal of it, to be honest. I think that Call of Duty is more of like a casual arena shooter.
You hear that?
That's just kind of how I see it.
The best competitive player in the world is calling you out.
I wouldn't say that.
Call of Duty World War II, baby. It's going to be great.
I look forward to that game,
see,
honestly.
Best endorsed by the best player in the world.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but Counter-Strike, for example, though, it has a huge competitive following because of the, I think, mostly because of the strategy that goes into it. There's not
a
lot of strategy.
It has a huge competitive strategy, or a huge competitive following because the source is completely broken.
You're
aiming at the ground and it's shooting in the air.
I mostly just think that it's the strategy that goes into it. There was never a ton of strategy in Call of Duty. There's lots of strategy in games like Dota and League. Lots of inner workings within. There's like they call it like the metagame. There's things beneath things that are much more intricate than kind of your Call of Duty.
Right.
For
there's just the first level is just learning to play the game, right? Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, due to time, I apologize. We have time for one more question. So who's got the biggest dying question, Con Man?
I mean, I have just, like, an input on that. Like,
go for it.
All right, so you said, I mean, Counter-Strike, all these games, like, League, all these games, they match players by basically, like, how they played games in the past. They have, like, certain rankings, where Call of Duty is just throwing the first people that lined up into the same pit together. PUBG, throwing the same people into the pit together. Actually, I don't actually really know about PUBG's whole matchmaking thing, but I know for a fact that Call of Duty, like, you could get an amazing player, top 10 on the leaderboards, and go in with someone who's bottom tier on the leaderboards. Like, there's no whole structure to it. That's why there is no strategy, quote-unquote, in there. It's whoever has the best reaction time.
It's a Twitch shooter.
Yeah, exactly. It's a Twitch shooter. There was always a few of the most overpowered guns in every game. Everyone knew. There wasn't anything to really be kind of learned beyond that. And I think that's why the game never really took off as a high-end
competitive cash shooter.
Yeah, pretty much.
So
it was more of a pay to play as opposed to
not even that.
You think about it from a competitive standpoint, if one gun dominates the entire battlefield, you are already at a disadvantage by using something different. With competitive, the way it's competitive is because there's multiple ways to attack a game, multiple strategies, multiple play styles. If that's killed off, what can you do? Because everybody's gonna do the exact same thing. It's gonna basically have like reaction time, two kills each other first, basically.
That's a very, very good way of explaining it. Mm-hmm.
So last, who's got the final question? Who wants?
No, I don't want a question. I wanna explain. All right,
Alan's got
I wanna give it a go. Okay. Right? My theory, my whatever. I think that the reason that competitive games are competitive is not because of the games themselves inherently. I think it's because of the communities that spring up around them.
That's a very, very good. I agree with you on that as well.
It doesn't depend on the developer because For Honor is not a competitive game. It doesn't depend on how competitive the game can be. It depends on how much heart and effort the community around it spends in trying to develop the game.
I agree. I think that's a very, very big part of kind of like how the competitive community will kind of form around the game. I do agree with you on that.
So actually, one last thing. Sorry, I'm gonna bug in here. Do you find games offensive that already try to build an esports league when they already haven't had the community established, because there's already games like Lawbreakers or stuff that, like the one game that was announced at Xbox E3 that tries to build a competitive scene.
Oh, the Darwin
something? Yeah, the Darwin. Like, what do you feel about that when they try to make something that's not there?
It feels a little weird. I've thought about that quite a bit, too. I've seen kind of those games spring up recently. Forced, right? Yeah, it feels very forced. They kind of were parading recently. I can't remember which developer, but they were developing, like, the first VR esport.
Oh!
Like, you can't, I feel
yeah,
like...
Yeah, the PC gaming show.
It's,
yep.
it's really, it feels forced. It feels kind of strange, because a lot of the developers that are making these games, I think they have the competition in mind when they make it, but they're not making it to make an esport, because when you do that, it sounds like there's a lack of passion. It honestly sounds like you're doing it for a cash grab. Yep, I'm not a huge fan of that. I really am not, because some of the most successful competitive games like Dota, Counter-Strike, League, like I said, the developers were going into it with the competition in mind, but I'm sure they weren't thinking like, oh, down the line, I can't wait for this to be esport.
Right. I hope to fill arenas with this game.
I don't think anybody was thinking
that. It's like Rainbow Six, kind of. They came out with the news statement saying they didn't expect the game to become so popular. Well, yeah. It's games like that that the community takes by storm.
I don't think they plan to have a next season. They plan to have it like 1 year and then done. Where I mean, people are still playing it. Don't know what their servers are doing, but you know.
So, basically, at the end of every episode, Ryan, we do a cheap gaming section based off the theme of our episode. Obviously, competitive games is the topic. Starting from Eric down, what game you recommend for college students to get into the competitive scene?
Oh, to get into the competitive scene, I mean, it depends on what you want to get into. I'd say, first off, is either League or Smite, free MOBAs that are highly addictive. I mean, I'm sure Nick can remember me whittling hours and hours away on Smite our freshman year.
Yes. He wouldn't talk to us. He had this pretzel jar, and he would sit there and play Smite. Oh, yeah. What's Eric doing? Oh, he's playing Smite. Oh, I guess I'll see him later.
Yep. He's on the pretzels.
Yeah. Freshman 15 was very real for Eric.
Freshman 40.
Freshman lose 40 because I got mono. But yeah, that was for shooters, I always got to go with it. Can you guys guess what I'm going to say for the shooter?
CSGO?
Overwatch.
Overwatch.
Quick interruption. I got him a pop vinyl first.
Yeah, Nick's birthday gift to me was a Reinhardt pop vinyl, and I cherish that thing.
How much did it cost?
You get Soldier 76, right?
How much did it cost, Nick?
We don't discuss finances.
Oh, my God.
Alan, your game. And real quick, Ryan, this can be a game to go for or a game to avidly avoid.
Okay, sure.
Ooh, avoid? Can I do avoid?
You can do avoid or go.
Are you
going to
say League
it?
Of Legends?
No, counterproductive. No, I'm not
going to
say
League. Don't do it.
I mean, avoid the community.
Smash.
Smash. Avoid Smash Bros.
Just joking. Just joking.
Avoid Brawl. Agreed. There's one S-tier character. Everybody else is garbage. No. Well, there's a lot of different platform fighters. I don't really care about them right now. Like, Smash, obviously, I love. But right now, I'm looking into either Skullgirls, which is pretty cheap. Or Street Fighter. Street Fighter V is... It's becoming more deep, actually, with the new characters being added. They can actually combo people compared to other characters, but that makes it also more difficult to fight against them, which is interesting.
Okay, for me, I'm going to have to obviously throw in League of Legends. It's completely free to play. The only things you have to pay for are cosmetics. So that was
real
one
quick question on League. Who's your main?
Oh, my favorite champion is Jax.
Ooh.
He's my favorite.
There's a pop vinyl of Jax.
I have a Jax figurine, and Irelia is my very, very close second.
Your pop vinyls.
Everyone needs a pop vinyl.
One of the things that I think made it kind of stick for me was that it was free, and it was like I could always come back and play it whenever, and I really enjoyed that constant updates. So I think that was one reason why it really hooked me. Honestly, I already mentioned Counter-Strike quite a few times. Counter-Strike is pretty cheap. I think that's a fun shooter to get into, very competitive. There's a lot of aspects of that game that make it quite addictive. And one platforming fighter that I've actually found kind of recently that is pretty fun and I think is underrated, it's called Nidhogg 2.
Nidhogg, yep.
Yeah, that game, I think that's a pretty underrated game. I'd definitely give that one a try if you wanted a very interesting and different take on the platform fighter.
Okay, do this real quick. I'm a first-person shooter guy, so any game that I would recommend would have to be PUBG real quick because it's on the up-and-coming.
Isn't that third-person?
They have first-person dedicated servers now.
Oh, that's awesome.
Really? New first-person mode.
That's
yeah.
awesome. Well, I guess for my wrap, it would be the most competitive game ever released this generation, Star Wars Battlefront. No, my competitive game would be actually the game that we saw Alan play, Rivals of Aether. I think that's a good upcoming game.
Yeah?
Yeah, they just finally got released.
That one does look
I bought it.
Okay.
Will I play it?
Yes.
We'll find out. Actually, there's gameplay on our channel. A little cop in there. But that would be my game to play. Right. I want to thank Ryan for joining us. Thanks, man.
Thank you for having
Small
me.
Small clap.
Thank you for having me.
And I also thank the guys for coming out here. Michael, too, over there, doing all of the hard work that
Rocks
he does.
My boy, Michael.
So either way, this is episode 1 of season 2. We're back at it again in the fall. It's crazy to think that we're already on season 2. Season 1's over. Our summer show's over. We are now on YouTube. We are now on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us on there to get more updates, etc. Also, too, shout out to the esports team.
Yeah, go ahead. We just recently set up a Twitter account and a Facebook page for it's at UST Esports Club. Go check us out. Send us a follow. Do something. I love the support.
Yeah. Seriously, all the support would be great. And for us, too, for the students listening, the Facebook will have the updates for us. It's a lot easier for us to communicate one-to-one, and it allows us not to spam your email account with emails you're not going to read.
Also, don't forget, if any viewers out there have a suggestion for a possible topic for us that we, you know, can respectfully cover, feel free to give us a shout on Facebook.
Yep. I've also been running polls on Twitter as well, and I'll be running up some more stuff like that to kind of get some more kind of insight on what we want to create.
Okay.
But again, thanks again to KUST for bringing this episode live to you guys. I'm Nick.
I'm Connor.
I'm Alan.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Ryan.
And this has been episode 1 of the Casually Hardcore Podcast. Have a good night, guys. Season 2.
Neck 2, baby.
Have a good one.